One thing we have to understand is that while we have the largest embassy in Iraq, it very much is a fortress. One of the metrics which I look at is the number of trips which our diplomats take outside the embassy and outside the green zone every day. My understanding from talking to diplomats, given the security that's required for these excursions, is that in the largest U.S. embassy in the world, there's less than a dozen trips outside the embassy per day. That includes the ambassador, that includes all the diplomats stationed there, which is very much problematic, because also if it stretches our security so much to simply have so few excursions outside the green zone, then in reality our diplomats aren't getting out of Baghdad, and we really have very little idea, far less than we had before, about what's going on. This brings me to my second point. It was the theme of an op-ed I did in the Washington Post on Friday about how, while we plan to have established two embassies, one in Basra in the south and one in Erbil in Iraqi Kurdistan, in reality right now, it's going to be the consulates far more than the embassy which are going to be important, and it's absolute strategic malpractice and diplomatic malpractice not to have consulates not only in Najaf but also in Kirkuk, not Mosul as well, moving forward. Let me transition now to talk about what we can expect from our influence. There seems to be a cognitive dissonance. We don't recognize that our influence is inversely proportional to boots on the ground, so to speak. We are going to lose the friends who we paid for example, in Al-Anbar, and we're also going to lose the friends whose loyalty we won. It's in absolutely everyone's interest to make accommodation with Iran at this point, because they're the strongest player on the block. The last point I'll make before turning the floor over to Fred and Tom involves looking at who's up and who's down as the elections move forward. It will be interesting. This deadlock isn't going to be resolved soon. The Kurds have every incentive to resist as long as possible because their currency goes down the second the United States withdraws. One of the figures which I'm curious about is Muqtada al-Sadr. He's rallied against U.S. occupation. That's been his major populist play, if you will. And once the United States actually withdraws, it will be interesting to see where he is. The last point I'll make before turning the floor over is to recognize that while we say that we still have 50,000 troops in Iraq, the fact of the matter is we don't have 50,000 troops in Iraq until December 2011, and then they all just disappear. Their main focus right now is going to be on withdrawing, even if they talk about training. It takes a heck of a lot of energy and attention to withdraw not only the 50,000 troops safely, but the equipment so that it can be used elsewhere. And unfortunately, what we've done by rushing this withdrawal according to a Washington timeline, as opposed to simply what the Status of Forces Agreement says, is we have hemorrhaged our support at a time that has helped create a perfect storm in Iraqi politics.